All right, we are underway. Session 23, page 166 in your notebook. Let's do a little bit of review so we'll see how we got to where we are tonight. Last week, we looked at the 30-minute video, The Miracle of 48 in Against All Odds, where we saw some firsthand reports of some very unusual incidents in the lives of some of the soldiers during the War of Independence. Some pretty amazing stuff there. And again, those type of stories happen or come out of every one of Israel's wars. They're not that unusual. It's amazing. All right, then we saw that Israel became a member of the UN, and there's the Israeli flag being raised in the UN plaza. Abba Iban is there, the third from the left. David Ben-Gurion was elected the first prime minister of Israel. Then Chaim Weizmann elected the first president of Israel. I believe that this guy did a tremendous amount to put the first state in place. And the Knesset, the government, started functioning as well. There's a picture of the Knesset building. Immediately after Israel became a state, a tremendous, unprecedented immigration began of Jewish people from the Arab world, usually under duress, some kind of pressure on them to make life unbearable in the Arab state that they were living in. So literally, thousands upon thousands of Jewish people came to Israel beginning in May of 1948. And you have this map in your book. One of the more famous immigration incidents was the airlift of Yemenite Jews from Yemen, here in the southwest corner of the Arabian Peninsula, airlifted up to Israel. Thousands of them, again, airlifted in DC-4s, planes a lot smaller and a lot slower, a lot less sophisticated than what we have today, packed with 200 Yemenite Jews per flight, around the clock, 200 Jews at a flight, many, many flights. Thousands were brought into Israel. Question?
Where did they go when they got to Israel?
I'll let that be answered by the DVD we're going to see in just a few minutes, because the DVD we're going to look at today covers the immigration crisis. Okay? Then we talked about the law of return, which really began with the Brother Daniel case, where Shmuel Rufisin, or Oswald Rufisin, a Jewish man who had converted to Catholicism and become a Carmelite monk, tried to enter Israel based on his Jewish heritage and was refused entrance on the law of return. By the way, he eventually did get into Israel as a non-Jew. If you want to read about Oswald Rufisin, I was informed about this book here called In the Lion's Den, The Life of Oswald Rufisin. I haven't read it myself, but I did read the little blurb about it on Amazon.com. And I've read up a little bit on his life. He passed himself off as a Polish German, or a German Pole, I guess, because he was fluent in German. And he ended up working for the Nazis in the little town he was in. And as working for the commander of that little town, he was able to feed information to the ghetto and to Jewish people. He saved a lot of Jewish lives. Say again? Well, yeah, he was kind of working as a spy, and he helped arm some of the ghettos. He even helped, I think it was a little town, escape the Nazis by warning them. He eventually was found out, and he had to flee for his life. He became a partisan fighter, and so he fought the Nazis, eventually ended up in a convent, I believe it was, and became a believer in Jesus and of some sort, and became a Carmelite monk, and then, of course, tried to enter Israel based on its Jewish heritage. So it's a fascinating story, and the details are there apparently in this book by Nechama Tech. So if you're interested in the life of Oswald Rufisin, he's another one of those amazing people who went through amazing experiences during the Holocaust, World War II, and the beginning of the State of Israel.
Back.
Question?
If a Jew in Israel claims Yeshua as their Lord and Savior, do they lose their citizenship?
Do they lose their citizenship? Not if they're native Israeli. If they're sovereign, no, they can't lose their citizenship. But if you come into the country under false pretenses and they find out that you're a Jewish believer, they can kick you out and revoke your citizenship. Yes, definitely. So that's one of the reasons I don't even attempt Aliyah. I mean, I can't lie about it, so I would never be allowed in the country. Okay, so that brings us now to 1950 again. We looked at the law of return as it went through twists and turns, 1978, 1989, 1992, etc. So now, jump into your time machine. We're now going to return to 1950. Okay, did you feel that? We're now back in 1950, okay? And it's the airborne transfer of 121,000 Jews from Iraq to Israel. Everybody there? Page 166. The emigration from Yemen was soon followed and ultimately surpassed by a massive airlift of Jews from Iraq. Now, you have this map in its entirety, but I've just focused in on the right side of the map. And, of course, we're looking at Iraq here. We're all very familiar with Iraq due to the last events, the recent history. But almost 130,000 Jews were in Iraq at that time. So there's the country we're looking at. They were the largest, the oldest, and the most distinguished of all Eastern Jewish communities. You see, the Jewish community in Iraq, which includes Babylon, started there with the exodus to Babylon for 70 years, the first deportation to Babylon that we read about in the Bible. And life was so good in Babylon that most Jews decided to stay. Only a small number came back to Israel with Ezra and Nehemiah. The vast majority stayed in Babylon. There was a large community in Babylon during the first century when Yeshua walked the earth. And the community has remained there. To this day, there's even a few Jews in Iraq. And so this is the roots of the Iraqi Jewish community. It goes all the way back to the Babylonian expulsion in 586 B.C. So the largest, oldest, and most distinguished of all Eastern Jewish communities. The population numbered approximately 130,000 in 1948. Now, circumstances for the Iraqi community began to go bad in the 1930s with the Arab right-wing nationalism and the pro-German government. However, in 1948 and 49, during the War of Independence, Iraqi Jewry entered its darkest hour. Page 167. Under the cloak of martial law, the Baghdad government subjected the nation's Jewish citizens to organized persecution, official persecution. Jewish homes were searched, often pillaged. Hundreds of Jews were arrested, imprisoned, charged with treason. Jews were expelled from the government. Jewish doctors and pharmacists barred from practice. Jewish students expelled from the university. Jewish banks closed. Jewish merchants denied import licenses. The community faced economic ruin. Now, with the outbreak of fighting in Israel, emigration to Israel was declared a capital offense. You try to emigrate, off with your head. You know, kill them. Nevertheless, the government was intrigued by the prospect of inheriting large quantities of abandoned Jewish property. So in March of 1950, the Iraqi government gave official sanction to Jewish emigration on the condition that the Jews applying for exit permits relinquish their Iraqi citizenship. Iraq's Jews applied for immigration by the tens of thousands. Wow. Nobody wanted to stay. Baghdad then granted permission for air transport, and the great airlift was dubbed Operation Ali Baba. It was launched in May 1950. It's also known as Operation Ezra and Nehemiah. So you might see under that name as well. All right, so here's a picture, Operation Ali Baba. Here are these Iraqi Jewish people coming down the El Al stairway in Israel. And then using the other name, Operation Ezra and Nehemiah, here's another picture of Iraqi Jews off their aircraft coming into Israel. So, of course, Operation Ezra and Nehemiah, of course, refers to the biblical material where Ezra and Nehemiah and the remnant came back to the land of Israel. By the time it ended, by the time the airlift ended in December 1951, 113,000 passengers were flown to the Jewish state. Afterwards, smaller numbers of Jews reached Israel via Iran, bringing the total Iraqi immigration to 121,000. All right, the next heading in your workbook says Jordan annexes the West Bank. I'm going to expand that little bit up here on the screen. I have a map of Jordan in my collection of maps, and I couldn't get a date as to when this map was printed. All I can tell you is that it is pre-1967, okay? And why do I know it's pre-1967? Well, because on the inside of the map, there's a little inset. And here's the inset. And this inset shows Jordan sitting among its surrounding countries. You see the red country of Jordan there, right? Okay, now, what nations are mentioned here? Well, there's Egypt. There's Saudi Arabia. There's Iraq. There's Kuwait. There's Iraq. There's Iran. There's Turkey. There's the Syrian Arab Republic. There's Lebanon. Yeah, you noticed, huh? This was typical of the period, that Arab maps would not list Israel as a country. They would not list them. What other country is missing? What else is not on this map? A Palestinian state. Okay, do you see a Palestinian state there? Of course, you can figure out where Israel is because there are boundaries there. Let's go in close. Huh? Let's go in closer to the map. 1950, Jordan illegally annexed the West Bank. Where's the West Bank? Do you see it there? That tumor going into Israel? There it is. Okay. This is not a Palestinian state in 1950. This is Jordan.
Did you say illegally?
Yes. Yes. They illegally annexed it. Yes. In violation of international law. Okay. There's no Palestinian state there. The people who were living in that territory, we call it Judea and Samaria today, were Jordanians. They had Jordanian citizenship. Okay, they were not Palestinians. Does that make sense? There is no state of Palestine at this time. The Arabs had rejected the UN arrangement. Israel had accepted it. And the state of Israel does exist, but the state of Palestine does not. Okay? Burn that into your brain. 1950, it does not exist. Now, also consider this thought. If Jordan wanted to set up a Palestinian state, wouldn't you say that this was an opportunity to do so? Okay. 1950, no Palestinian state, and none is set up. None is set up. Okay, for the poor, starving, you know, Palestinian refugees, those poor people. Yes?
Had Jordan been a country since World War I, was that? Or what did it
happen? Yeah, Jordan became a country as the British enacted the mandate they were given. You know, most of these countries surrounding Israel became independent Arab states as Britain and France enacted the mandate given to them. Yeah, most of them are recent. All right, so keep that in mind. 1950, Jordan annexes the West Bank. All right. 1951, Second Knesset elected. Tension on the borders increases. Then on page 167 and 168, you have a summary chart of the period from 1947 through 1956. Okay, so you can refer to that just for an overall view of the period. Right now, however, we are going to go to the movies. We are going to view program number 2 of the DVD, Israel as a Nation is Born, hosted by former Foreign Minister Abba Iban. All right, it's a 55-minute documentary, program number 2, dealing with 1948 through 1956. And we'll answer Peter's question about what happened to the Jewish refugees when they came back into the country. This video will deal very clearly with the refugee crisis First of all, it deals with the war crisis, the refugee crisis, the economic crisis, the birth pangs here of the nation. The nation has been born, but it still has to grow. Maybe I should call these the growing pains of the nation, okay? So if somebody would get the lights, let me get the video off here, let me get the sound off here.